It is June 18th, 2010. We're at the offices of Goldman Sachs in New York. It's about 9:20 a.m. And we're interviewing Mr. Davelman, formerly of Goldman Sachs. Mr. Davelman, my name is Chris Seifer. I'm an attorney with the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. We were established by a statute passed last year called the Fraud Enforcement and Recovery Act, and it tells us to figure out the various causes of the financial crisis. So that's what we're trying to do. That statute specifically tells us to look at institutions that failed or would have failed but for the receipt of exceptional government assistance. That's why we are looking at AIG. That's one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you, because it's our understanding that you were dealing with AIG, at least in terms of the collateral call disputes on the CDS contracts. That statute also tells us to look at the role of complex financial derivatives and any role they may or may not have played in the financial crisis. So again, that's the reason we're looking at AIG, and the reason we wanted to talk to you. So thank you very much for coming down today. I appreciate it. Before we get started on the substantive questions, could you just give me a general description of your educational and work background since college?
Sure.
Including college.
Okay, I graduated in 1983 from Dartmouth College with a degree in theology. I went to work my family's business after graduation. We packaged and sold automotive hardware, nuts and bolts and screws, located in Brooklyn, New York. My dad died in 84. I ran it by myself from then until 87 when I sold it and went to Stanford's Graduate School of Business. I graduated there in 1989 and went to work at Lehman Brothers, where I traded mortgage derivatives until the end of 93 when I left to join Goldman Sachs. I traded the same products at Goldman for another 2 or 3 years before moving to sales. My first 2 or 3 years in sales, I focused on mortgages for middle market clients. And in 1999, I was asked to move to the institutional mortgage sales desk. And then in 2006, I was asked to move to the structured credit sales desk in the corporate credit area.
So when we're talking about the relationship between AIG and Goldman, that's when you were working on the institutional mortgage sales desk?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, tell me generally about your derivatives trading work at Lehman from 89 to 93.
Sure. Mortgage derivatives include inverse floaters. These are CMO derivatives, so inverse floaters, interest-only strips, and principal-only strips.
And you're just selling them to clients?
Well, I was on the trading desk,
okay.
So buying and selling.
So you're the market maker.
That's right.
Okay, and was it the same type of job at Goldman when you joined in 93 for those 2 to 3 years?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, tell me generally about your job responsibilities on the institutional mortgage sales desk.
I was responsible for covering certain of Goldman's clients for whatever mortgage needs they might have.
And what does that mean? I'm sorry, I'm not in the business, but when you say you're responsible for a certain amount of clients, what does the institutional mortgage sales desk do?
Okay, so we would cover very large institutional clients. These would include large money center banks, commercial banks, hedge funds, and traditional money managers like a Fidelity or a Vanguard, as well as, and I use those simply as examples, mm-hmm. As well as insurance companies and pension funds.
Okay, so are you a market maker on this desk or a sales guy on this desk?
I'm a salesperson on the desk.
Okay. So I take it one of the clients you didn't mention was AIG, but I take it that was one of them, correct?
AIG FP, actually, the financial products group.
Okay, so when does your relationship with AIGFP first start?
It first started in 1997 or thereabouts. It was either like late 96 or early 97 when I switched over to the sales side from trading. AIGFP had originally was a swaps and derivative centric investor and market maker, and one of their ideas was that embedded in a mortgage are very long dated options. So the homeowner, if interest rates drop enough, the homeowner can refinance his mortgage. Technically speaking, that's an option. Mm-hmm. And AIGFP thought that since they had expertise in these very long dated options, they could profitably buy mortgage product and hedge out all the various risks and have an excess return to their capital.
Okay, so explain to me how they did that.
They ended up never doing that.
Oh, okay. All right, so your initial contact with AIGFP is simply having discussions about that possible type of business transaction that never occurs.
That's right.
Okay, so what's next?
Next is having discussions with them about other kinds of products. They invested in some commercial mortgage-backed securities through me. And then around 2000, well, in 1999, AIG and FP and Goldman Sachs entered into a significant transaction having to do with commercial mortgages. After the 1998 meltdown, the long-term capital and Russian debt crisis, finding capital to...
Hi, Chris.
To borrow for commercial real estate became quite scarce. And Goldman recognized an opportunity to land at the mezzanine level. So there would be a senior mortgage, first lien mortgage, then this mezzanine mortgage, then the real estate developer's equity. That mezzanine piece, Goldman felt was sort of mispriced, and they could lend very, very profitably to that level, at the mezzanine level. And we approached AIGFP to lever our investment. So AIG agreed to provide credit guarantees for debt that Goldman used to increase the amount of money we lent to the mezzanine level for commercial real estate.
Okay, I think I understood that. So basically the mezz level is secured by the second deed of trust, essentially, after the senior lien?
Right.
Okay, and then Goldman simply purchasing credit protection on that mezzanine layer?
Not quite. Goldman's borrowing cash from the marketplace, and AIG guaranteed that debt.
Right, right. And then in what form was that guarantee? Was it a credit default swap?
No. I'd have to check. My recollection is sort of the equivalent of AIG commercial paper or short-term debt.
Okay, and did that business go on for a while?
I mean, that was basically a single trade with a lifespan of probably 5 or so years.
Okay, so what's next in the AIG Goldman relationship in terms of your involvement?
And then around 2000 or 2001, AIG started providing liquidity puts for cash CDOs.
Whenever you say AIG, you mean FP?
I mean FP, right? Yes. If it's easier, I'm happy to say
no,
FP.
No, it's fine. Just as long as the record's clear, and more importantly, that I'm clear. Okay, so explain to me, are AIG provided liquidity puts on what again? I'm sorry.
On senior portions of CDO, cash CDO cash flows.
Is that the same thing as the CDS, or is it different?
No, that's different.
Okay, so explain to me what the liquidity puts are, how they work.
So a CDO might have a AAA rated tranche that has a legal 30-year maturity. Mm-hmm. What Goldman will do is take those cash flows along with AIG's liquidity puts and sell them in the short-term debt markets, say 90-day or 180-day type maturities. And the idea was that if at the end of the 180 days they couldn't be re-auctioned successfully, AIG would buy them. So in essence, if there's a dislocation in the short-term debt market, AIG would step up and buy them until such time as that market returned.
And how long did the liquidity put business go on between Goldman and AIG?
Probably only a couple of years.
Okay. Until about 2003, maybe?
Yeah, maybe even shorter than that.
Okay. Eventually we're going to talk about the CDS and the collateral call disputes. Any situation like that with the liquidity puts?
No.
Okay, next.
So CDS technology continued to change, and Goldman entered the subprime mortgage business probably around 2001 or so, 2002 maybe. And AIGFP was in the business of writing credit default swap protection on the super senior tranches of those CDOs.
Okay, so is it in the 2001-2002 time frame that Goldman purchases the first credit default swap?
It's probably later than that. It's probably 03 or so.
And what's your involvement in the actual purchase of the CDS, if any?
I'm basically the conduit, so I would have the conversations between our structuring desk and the client and handle the negotiations.
I'm sorry, will you say that again?
Sure, I was basically the middleman. Mm-hmm. I stood between our structuring desk and FP and handled the negotiations.
Okay, so explain to me the role of the structuring desk. Are they the ones deciding whether or not they want to buy the CDS?
They're the ones who are trying to pull together all the pieces in order to print a CDO.
Okay. So these are the folks like Mr. Eagle and Mr. Tor and those guys?
Well, in this time frame, it would have been Peter Ostrom.
Okay. This time frame being 2003?
That's right.
Okay. Who other than Mr. Ostrom in 2003, or is he the guy in charge?
Well, he was in charge along with Mike Enriquez. And John Eagle's on that desk as well, but I was really mostly dealing with Ostrom and Enriquez.
Okay. And does that change over time?
It does. Mike Enriquez left the firm, I don't recall which year.
Who are you dealing with other than Mr. Ostrom and Mr. Enriquez? And after Mr. Enriquez leaves, who are you dealing with besides Mr. Ostrom?
Well, he would have had deal captains beneath him, so some of the junior guys on the desk would have been in charge of a specific deal, mm-hmm. and that would be the main point of contact for that particular deal.
Okay, and then, so the structuring desk essentially calls you and says, we're getting a deal done. Part of this deal is buying credit default swap from AIG. Give them a call. Get a quote?
In essence, yes.
Okay. And did that part of your job, you know, the initial purchase of the CDS, change over time at all? Was that generally how it was working?
Yes, that's exactly how it worked.
Okay. I know I have it in my record somewhere, but when's the last time Goldman buys a CDS from AIG? Do you recall?
It would have been sometime in 2006.
Okay.
I don't think we did any transactions in 2007, but I'd have to check my records on that.
That sounds familiar with what I've heard. Everyone, this is Donna Norman from the FCIC. Mr. Dobbleman. Okay, so what's next in terms of your dealings with FP other than working as the middleman to make the orders for the initial CDS purchase? I know eventually we're going to get to collateral call disputes.
Right.
Is there something else in terms of your dealings with FP other than initially getting the quotes and buying the CDS and dealing with the disputes on the collateral calls down the road?
No, I mean, that was my function.
Okay.
Talk to FP on behalf of different Goldman traders.
Okay. So when you're buying, when you're contacting FP to get the quotes and buy the CDS, who are you dealing with at FP?
Alan Frost.
And that was the case for the entire time, 2003 to 2006-7?
That was the time from 2003 until, I would say, midway through 2005, when that business became sort of mechanized to a certain degree. And so Alan was asked to build a new business at FP, and they brought other guys into FP to sort of shepherd the CDS business along.
Okay, so who are you dealing with after mid 2005, or is it just, you said it got mechanized, are you really dealing with anyone? Is it?
Oh no, it wasn't quite that that plain vanilla. It was Adam Budnick, Budnick, and Tom Appen.
Okay, and so other than those three individuals, anybody else that you're dealing with in terms of the initial purchases of the CDS?
No.
Okay. Okay, so we see, our records indicate anyway, that the first collateral call we see on the CDS by Goldman is in the July 07 timeframe. Is that consistent with your recollection?
Yes, that is.
Okay, so tell me, generally, what happens in July of 07?
Well, generally speaking, open swap trades are marked, and depending on the trade, it could be daily, it could be monthly, and the computer spits out a collateral call one way or the other. If Goldman has to post or if we're expecting to be posted by a counterparty. At the end of July, prices on the underlying assets have declined in value, and that simply triggered the collateral call pursuant to our contract with AIG.
When you say the computer spits out a marked market, how does that work? Do you know?
Well, traders would mark each position, and it would flow through the back office computers of Goldman Sachs.
And when a margin call is made, is that you making the margin call to AIG FP? Does the market made and they say, Mr. Dobbleman, we need money from AIG FP, send them the margin call notice?
This was a little unusual. The magnitude was made this unusual. If it was smaller, then our back office simply would have contacted their back office and asked for collateral.
Okay, I think the initial call in July of 07 was like $1.8 billion, so that was an unusual amount, I take it.
It sounds like a large number to me.
Unusual enough so that you made the call?
Unusual enough that the price decline was so dramatic and the notional sizes were so large that, if I'll use round numbers, if it's $20 billion of notional in force, every 1 percentage point drop in price was a collateral call of $200 million. Mm-hmm. So if prices moved 5 points, that's your $1 billion, and prices were moving pretty dramatically.
Okay.
Chris, can I just clarify 1 point on documentation?
Sure.
So, Andy, do you know whether a collateral call notice was actually still sent from operations at Goldman to operations at AIGFP?
I don't know with certainty. That would be a standard procedure, though. As a courtesy, we would call and say, expect this collateral call, and then it would go through the normal channels.
Right. The heads-up phone call. Right. Okay. And the heads-up phone call comes because this isn't a $10 million margin call. It's a $1.8 billion margin call because of fairly volatile markets and a very fairly large mark-to-market.
Yes, and also because it's AIGFP and AIG, generally speaking.
Right.
You mentioned the market was volatile. The documents that I reviewed, which is undoubtedly some subset of the documents there are, indicated that on July 25th, Goldman made a margin call to AIG for $121 million, and then 2 days later, it made the $1.8 billion call. So is there something you recall that happened on that day that moved the market that dramatically? I know it
was the. Do you know which areas of Goldman were making those different calls?
I don't. Is there something that you remember about that time period? I take it this was extraordinary.
Right. I was unaware of the hundred and something million dollar call. That would not. That may have been. Swaps, it could have been a host of different things I'm unaware of or and unconnected with. Goldman and AIGFP did trade in the broker screens quite frequently, so there were trades I'm unaware of. But as far as the CDS contracts are concerned, it was the $1.8 billion that was.
Well, and perhaps it's more dramatic notable. With, if it went from zero to 1.8, but what happened during that 2 day period?
Well, again, it could just be that the 1.8 was, I'm speculating, that it's the month-end mark, that Visa were marked monthly, and the month-end marks for the CDO book occurred at the very end of the month, and that generated the 1.8. I don't know what the 100 million.
You know, do you have any recollection of any internal meetings at Goldman to say to your traders, hey, where did this come from?
The 1.8 or the?
The 1.8.
I think there were internal meetings, no. I mean, the traders mark where they feel they trade in the marketplace.
Just to follow up on Chris's question about the computer spits out the marks, and you said that the traders marked their positions. On the daily marks, the traders marked each position daily and put those inputs in the computer, or was there a model being used based on market inputs?
I don't know precisely because each product might differ trading desk to trading desk.
I'll tell you why I'm wondering. When I looked at the margin calls, they came across daily for months and months and months during that period from July 07 to September 08. And every day that they went from Goldman to AIG, they were supported by 20 pages or 15 to 20 pages of trader marks. Every position was marked every day. So I'm wondering, that leads me to believe that it really is a computer generated as opposed to traders putting, so I'm wondering what inputs they're putting in, if you have any knowledge about that.
I mean, the only thing I would speculate is that they're using the price changes in the underlying subprime bonds that go into the CDO.
But do you know?
It's speculation, that's why I assume that you.
But would those be plugged in to automatically calculate every day? Again, it just seemed to me that it had to be some sort of automated program where they wouldn't be able to produce those daily that way.
I think the problem he's having is The marks are verified by controllers, so they're put in by the trader, and the calls are sent out by operations, so the things that you're looking at are documents that are going out from operations. So I don't think Andy's part of that.
As a salesperson, my systems don't permit me to see trader marks. They don't permit me to see collateral calls. There's a whole host of information that I don't see.
Okay. Who would be, which traders would be marking those positions?
Those would be marked by the CDO trading desk, headed by John Eagle.
So how do you find out about the one point, about the mark that results in the $1.8 billion margin call?
I probably got a heads up from Tom Harrop. Tom Harrop's in our principal funding, at the time, was in our principal funding group.
Okay, and put this on silent. Okay, and when you call FP to give the heads up, to give the good news, who are you dealing with at FP?
Well, initially I remember calling Alan Frost, since he was always my main contact there. But he had been removed from that business line, so the next call was to Tom Appen.
So I'm going
to... I'm sorry, just make sure I understand.
Sure.
Frost, you said, left in mid-05, right?
Well, he changed roles.
Oh, so he was still a point of contact?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We were working on other things as well.
Sorry.
So I'm going to ask you to take us through it chronologically with some questions, but first, throughout that time, who are the people that you are dealing with at FP throughout the margin call dispute in 07 and 08, other than Mr. Frost and Mr. Athan?
Adam Budnick supported Tom Appen, so he would have been the junior guy on the desk confirming calculations and accumulating information on their side. And then in London, Andrew Forster at FP.
And as the dispute goes forward, who besides you at Goldman is involved in the discussions? That brings a smile to your face.
Well, I'm trying to think who was involved in the discussions. Yeah. It might be easy to answer. This was a very, very high-profile situation. So on my side, it was the CDO trading desk. It was the principal funding group. And it was controllers, primarily. Controllers, meaning guys reporting up to David Vinier.
Okay. And I'm sorry, give me the first two groups, the principal...
The principal funding group.
And the second was?
The CDO trading desk.
Okay. So tell me who, and given your earlier comment, it'd be easier to say who wasn't involved. Who are the main people from those groups that are involved in the issue?
So on the CDO trading desk, John Eagle was the head of that. And the junior guys working for him were Chris Krieg and Jeff Williams.
Okay.
And on the principal funding side, that's my main contact there was Tom Harrop, but they all reported up into Roms Sundaram. He reported to Roms.
Okay. And then the controllers?
It would be Mike Simpson.
Anyone else?
That was the
main
central
guy.
Casting characters.
Now, I know we know from the documents that at some point Mr. Vinier gets involved. Does he fit into all three of these groups, or does...
Well, Mike Simpson is a report of his, so in essence, that was his main source of information from this.
Okay, so tell me what the principal funding group is and what their involvement is. Actually, I'm going to ask you this for all three groups, so tell me what the group is and what their involvement is within the dispute.
Sure. They would find sources of balance sheet across the globe so they could borrow money and invest. And the type of trades that we did with FP were something called negative basis trades. Are you familiar with that?
I am, but go ahead and explain.
So we would find the bank that was willing to buy a position of CDOs, AAA rated CDOs, onto their balance sheet and simultaneously enter into a total return swap with Goldman Sachs. Mm-hmm. And Goldman would pay them a certain amount for their balance sheet and would post collateral such that the value never deviated from par. I mean, the terms for each one may have been a little bit different, mm-hmm. but that's generally the idea. So at this point, Goldman has the economic risk of the performance of the AAA CDOs, but not the balance sheet exposure, other than having to post collateral for a decline in value. Goldman would then, or actually simultaneously, because the price is all sort of negotiated part and parcel, would purchase credit default swap protection from FP to alleviate the economic risk of the securities.
And both of those transactions are done through the principal funding group?
That's right.
Okay. So they're involved because they're the ones that essentially do the transaction.
They're the one, right, in essence, because they have phones and they can call all the different parties.
Okay.
There's nothing magical about it.
No, okay. And then is those are the reasons for the principal fundings group involvement. Anything more you should tell me about that, or do we now move on to the CDO trading desk?
No, that's okay. Pretty much it.
So tell me the role of the CDO trading desk.
Well, the CDO trading desk was responsible for marking CDO positions that Goldman had either lent against or was in a position to call or provide collateral on.
Okay, so they're doing the marks.
They do the marks and the trading. I mean, they have a day job, they trade.
Right, but I mean, in terms of the collateral dispute with AIG, is the CDO trading desk role providing marks?
It's providing marks, that's right.
Okay, and I take it that's the same with the controllers group?
Well, no, controllers group wouldn't actually mark the positions.
Okay, so tell me their role in the dispute.
Well, they're the ones who are focused on getting collateral.
And verifying the marks.
Verifying is their role.
And
right.
Well, I guess controllers would verify and Treasury would be interested in getting cash, right?
I don't think they want my
yes, okay.
Controllers aren't collection agents.
Yeah, they
right,
yeah.
Right. You're right.
Independent
right.
View of the marks.
Sure. And we've heard that from others.
Yeah,
so,
no,
yeah
I know.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier when I asked you who was involved, you know, that it was a very who wasn't involved would have been easier. It was a very high-profile situation. Was that the case from the very first margin call in July of 07?
I don't remember. I don't remember the email chains and who was CC'd on them and who wasn't, but it was a big number, so mm-hmm. people tend to over-communicate those sorts of things.
Okay. So I think we've also seen from the documents that pretty soon after the $1.8 billion call, it's reduced somewhat, I think initially to 1.2. Do you recall anything about that?
I do remember that, right.
Okay. So what do you recall about that?
My recollection is that the marks changed.
Okay. We've seen some indications that Goldman said our initial marks were wrong. Is your recollection our initial marks weren't wrong? The market continued to change, and the marks resulted in it going from 1.8 to 1.2.
I don't know if the marks are right or wrong. I just know that they changed.
Okay.
Do you recall any discussion about a difference between Goldman and AIG on using actual bids or mid-market prices?
No, not at that time.
So when I actually got ahead of myself. When you give them the heads up on the initial $1.8 billion call, that's Mr. Frost, correct?
Right. I gave him the first call, but he said, you know, I'm not the right guy. You have to talk to Tom Atten.
Okay. So I take it shortly after the call with Frost, he transfers you to Athan. Is it Athan? Athan?
Athan.
Athan. So what's the response?
I don't think I actually got him on the phone that day. I think I ended up having to send him an email. Mm-hmm. But the reaction wasn't wonderful.
Does he respond to your email, or does he pick up the phone and call you?
I think he replies to my email saying, you better goddamn be sure.